All right, guys, welcome back. This is the update for August 7th, 2020. All right, so let's go ahead and get to it. And just a reminder, right, it's just a weekly update. I'm doing three components. First one being market updates. I'm going to share with you guys some headlines and just share kind of my thoughts on what I think about it. And then a personal update, kind of what I've got going on in my business the last 7 days, I guess. Yeah, last 7 days this week. Wow, I can't believe it's Friday already. And the last aspect is an educational component, which today I'm actually just going to give you guys a gift, actually, for all of you for free. I feel like Ellen DeGeneres or David Dobrik, just giving away stuff for free. All right, so let's go ahead and get started with the market update. So I've got four headlines for you guys that kind of just encompass different aspects of the housing market and the real estate market. First one, really interesting. Lawmakers introduce legislation aiding cash-strapped commercial property owners. I thought it was an interesting move when, you know, about 2-3 months ago, the Federal Reserve bought $200 million worth of mortgage-backed securities, specifically commercial mortgage-backed securities. Now, if you go back, right, if you go back to like April and you look at the numbers for rent collection, surprisingly, multifamily did pretty well. If you're looking at the overall space of commercial real estate, which, by the way, guys, include everything from storage units, multifamily, storefronts, industrial warehouses. It encompasses a lot of things in real estate. Pretty much everything outside of just the single family housing market is predominantly commercial. So back in April, when supposedly it was like the worst time, I think multifamily collected 95-96% of all expected income, meaning that that's not the occupancy rate. That's literally 95-96%. Of regular income that they would have collected otherwise. And then storage was at 97, which was highest. However, storefront retail, so like your strip malls, they were at 47, I believe. And office spaces were around 56. Maybe I may be switching those two up, but either way, it's not looking good for the office space slash the retail storefront. Not looking good at all. So pretty much this is what the legislation will work towards. It will work towards commercial mortgages that are related to the strip malls. And I live in Illinois, right, specifically in the Wheaton-Warrenville area. And even just driving around with my wife, you know, when I go to Whole Foods or Jewel Osco or Target, there's a couple strip malls that we pass. And literally, I think half the units that we see are completely vacant. There is actually two stores I noticed in one strip mall that I pass as I go to Whole Foods. There's two units that got vacant, and they weren't before this whole COVID thing happened. And it's like literally starting April, I think that's when they closed down. I was like, wow, that's insane, right? So this legislation would pretty much aid cash-strapped commercial property, which my thoughts are, you know, at what point do you stop? You know, I mean, we're already over, I believe, $7 trillion in terms of the Fed balance sheet, buying notes, whatever they have to do, right? Open market operations, as they call it, in economics class. There's speculation, and then there's expectance that they're going to go above $20 trillion, which is insane, right? That's the whole verbiage that we use of kicking the can down the road. But, you know, the businesses fail, right? Real estate fails. We have these things called market cycles. And as much as I don't want to see people's businesses fail, these things just happen. You know, not everybody has a cash reserve. They don't. And we saw stuff in 08. We saw stuff even, you know, 2000 to 2003 and, you know, debt crises even before that. Do I like the system? No. However, you know, this is just what happens, right? So I don't know. I don't know if pumping another $12-13 trillion in the Fed balance sheet, I don't know what that's going to do. Okay, next headline, 23 million expected to be evicted once this mortgage moratorium is over, pretty much. That's what we're expecting here, the eviction moratorium, I'm sorry. 23 million Americans are expected to be evicted. Now, it might most likely not going to be all 23 million, but it will cause a chain reaction. You know, if you have a lot of multifamily buildings, especially Class B and Class C, landlords that are not able to pay their mortgage because, of course, a lot of the over-leveraging, we're going to have a huge problem. And a lot of people may say, well, Daniel, who cares if, you know, the values drop? Who cares if, you know, if the mortgages are over-leveraged, right? As long as we're able to pay the debt, who cares? Well, you know, maybe you won't care, but your commercial lender might. You know, I spoke to a lot of different commercial lenders, a lot of different high positioned individuals, I guess, in the banking world. And I mean, any single one of them will tell you that once a commercial mortgage, especially on a multifamily building, which by the way is deemed to be the less risky right now compared to all the other commercial real estate spaces and sectors, if a loan gets to 100% triple digit loan to value ratio, most likely they're going to ask that the guarantor or holder of the note will bring that down, provide enough liquidity to get it down to 80% LTV or potentially even 75. That's typically what happens when there's a liquidity crisis within the banking system. That's why I'm super curious as to why and how this is going to work with the additional potential, keyword potential, $12 to $13 trillion are going to be going in. It's going to be very, very interesting, but eventually the Band-Aid is going to have to be ripped off if you guys follow the analogy that I'm using. But 23 million expected to be evicted. I don't know how many landlords are going to be able to sustain that level of lack of income, the vacancy. I don't know how many landlords are going to be able to do that. And depending on how much liquidity is being pumped into the market and how many qualified buyers, and depending on how these big real estate companies, who by the way have been holding cash, right? Berkshire Hathaway broke their record 3 years ago, 2 years ago, for how much cash reserve, right? Brookfield, the big real estate company, I believe they're at somewhere in, they're in the billions. They had a lot of cash saved up, and a lot of real estate investors and big real estate firms are of the same mindset. A lot of them are waiting, but of course, a lot of stupidity is happening in the market right now, as my friend Dave Seymour would say, who I hope you guys watch this podcast or listen to his podcast. It was a really good one. All right, next headline, mortgage applications 22% higher than last year. Now, what's interesting is it might speed up, but I don't think it is. There's been a 5.1 drop this week from compared to last week. So if you're talking about this week, which is today is, you know, August 7th, right? I don't know what today is. It's Friday. 7th. Sorry, I had to look at my phone. 7th. Once a lot of these moratoriums and stimulus checks and, you know, these stimulus programs wear out, I'm not as confident how strong the single family housing market's going to be. I don't think it's going to crash. I don't think that's going to happen. I think rates are going to remain low for a while. I think, you know, I think your qualified buyer pool is going to get smaller. If you look at a lot of these unemployed individuals, you have to kind of give it time for those financial statements to catch up on the personal end. But I don't think it's going to absolutely crash. I think the demand is going to be somewhat okay. It's going to drop, right? Like we already saw over 5% drop this week from last week. But I don't see it crashing particularly. If anything, I see it happening more in the commercial mortgage space, in the commercial real estate space. Here's what's really interesting. Here's the last headline. Here's what I find really interesting. And I put this in there because I think it's a sign of what things are to come. So it's a very small story. So it's a tenant protest in California. So apparently this landlord tried evicting a tenant. This tenant gathered 30 people, right? These anti-landlord groups, I suppose, got together and they protested. As a matter of fact, they hired a contractor because the landlord had changed the locks, and obviously the usual thing that a landlord is going to do. And they hired a contractor. 30 tenants, I believe, showed up to the property to protest, and they blocked the moving truck, right? And I believe a sheriff was there. I'm not sure about that aspect, but they blocked the moving truck. They disrupted the moving company from moving, and they hired a contractor to break the lock and pretty much just protest and sit in. Now, obviously, the moratorium expired July 24th for federally backed mortgages in terms of stopping eviction. By the way, that's one of the main reasons why I'm the biggest supporter of paid off real estate. I'm a big, big, big supporter of that. And I'll be honest, like a lot of the real estate that I own, I put it on short amortizations, 15-year amortizations, 20-year amortizations. I don't think I have anything above 25. And reason being is, you know, I don't need the cash flow today. You know, I'm still young. I don't have kids yet. You know, I make money through different avenues, right? I mean, through YouTube, through my other real estate ventures, through our education company, digital marketing. I mean, I have multiple streams of income. So I don't need the cash flow necessarily. So I'm much more focused on paying off the principal because, you know, I'm only 26. I've got a lot of life ahead of me. And I do believe I've seen, and my observation tells me that the most financially smart people are the ones who think long-term. So I'm going to follow those people. But let me go back to the story. So they break in and they sit in, and it's ridiculous. And from what I heard, the resolution was that the landlord is pretty much just letting them stay. And my assumption is the tenant's obviously not paying rent because he or she has not been paying rent apparently for a couple months now. So here's my take. I think that's absolutely ridiculous, right? Because at the end of the day, sure. I mean, we could look at it from a legal aspect and how the tenant pretty much violated a contract, which is in the form of a lease, to the landlord. And the landlord has every right to do what he did. And the tenant knows that, you know, I mean, it seems like we're living in a day and age where responsibility is just completely shirked, kind of like the whole student loan thing. You know, at the end of the day, like, you know, our generation, we signed a piece of paper. We made the choice to go to college, and we signed that piece of paper pretty much telling the holder at B, the debt holder at B, that we will pay them back. Now, do I think the interest rate and that system's messed up? Yes, 100%, 100%, right? Like, you're looking at the guy who, him and his brother have a YouTube channel and is notorious for helping people pay off their mortgages and pay off their debt much, much faster. But at the end of the day, you know, like, it's not like the landlord is robbing the tenant of anything, right? There's no amortized rent payment, or there's no fiscal system that completely is disadvantaged to the financially uneducated, which in this case, I'm assuming is the tenant. There is none of that. From a legal standpoint, you know, the tenant is completely shirking all legal responsibility. Their signature and their word means nothing, which is a shame. It really is a shame. And number two, you know, from a moral standpoint, like, you're legitimately stealing. I believe that if you're a squatter, which we have a lot of those in Illinois, by the way, and you're staying in a unit without paying rent, I genuinely believe you're stealing, because it's the same way with renting cars. If you're going to rent a car and you're not going to pay for it and you're going to continue to drive the car, you're stealing. It's the same thing. I mean, just imagine, you know, you doing a service or you doing your job and your boss not paying you. That's not right. You can't do that. So anyways, I'm going to stop it at that, right? Overall, what do I think about the economy? What do I think about the market right now? You know, my buddy Dave Seymour, who I've already mentioned, says that I believe that this economy is being propped up by Mickey Mouse money. And man, is that accurate. It is so accurate. Mickey Mouse money in the form of a lot of over-leveraging that has yet to be shown in the form of financial demise, in the form of the Federal Reserve, both monetary and fiscal policy now with the HEALS Act coming out and trying to scramble to fix the economy as opposed to letting the market take its course and just ripping off the Band-Aid as fast as you can. But instead, you're prolonging it, and instead you're making it much more painful. You're making the Band-Aid much bigger and the scar much bigger. So like I said, I'm very much interested to see how things play out. I think there is going to be a big buying opportunity in the year 2021. I do believe that. I think once the election is over and a lot of the political agenda has been cleared, I think 2021 is something that we've never seen before, especially considering the amount of historical feats that have happened. Okay, personal update. So I'll make this quick because I can't wait to give you guys this gift. But I'm not gonna lie, it's been a very frustrating week. Just unable to travel to Florida has been tough. You know, we were still looking at deals down there, and there is a very huge, like I mentioned in the last podcast, I think last weekend update, there is a phenomenal opportunity that I've been praying for. And I actually stopped buying all multifamily 2017. As soon as I saw these inflated prices, I was like, yep, something's gonna happen. And sure enough, it's happening. And I pretty much waited, put together my team, raised money, prayed for 3 years, getting everything ready for this golden opportunity. And now it's happening. But on not being able to travel to Florida, a very unique part of Florida that is, it's been frustrating. So it's been tough. But I've been compensating my time and not being able to do deals and move forward and travel restrictions, right? I've been putting more attention towards you guys, right? How can I serve you guys towards this podcast, writing, putting out content, meeting with my marketing director, Katie, and, you know, our YouTube manager, Nick, and, you know, speaking with my good buddy, Blake, who has a phenomenal YouTube channel with, you know, 800,000 subscribers, which is crazy. By the way, Blake, if you're listening, shout out to you, my friend. But it makes me happy, right? I think it makes me fulfilled when I write content that ultimately helps you guys out. And even doing this, right, recording this right now, it's very fulfilling. And also just continuing to acquire investors. That's what I did this week, which, you know, if you guys want to know about what I've got going on and you're interested, well, email me at daniel@thequackbrothers.com. That's D-A-N-I-E-L at thequackbrothers.com. Quack Brothers is spelled K-W-A-K. So thequackbrothers.com. And I did something really cool with my buddy Andy this past Wednesday, where we actually just got a list of potential investors. And we, every Wednesday, we've just been picking three names out of a hat. And we've just been praying for them, and not praying for them as investors, but praying for them as just human beings, right? Praying for their spouse, praying for their kids, their lives, and where their heart's at, where their mind's at, their happiness. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm learning to care more about people than investors, if that makes any sense. And I like doing business with my friends. So it makes perfect sense. Oh, another thing this week, just arranging the fund. So putting all the paperwork together, putting the 506 paperwork, just to get ready for our attorney, who's, fun fact, I think it's the same attorney that did Grant Cardone's paperwork and still works with Grant. So pretty cool, because Grant and I, obviously he has it to a much higher degree, but I would say I have a decent database and a decent audience. So it's been really fun to kind of go down that path with my attorney. And we also hired a CFO who's probably the most qualified CFO I ever met in my life. And we actually have two people for that job. So that now brings the Miati Partners Capital team, which is my real estate fund that Kevin and I started. It brings the team now to 10 people, which is very exciting. You know, we've got research, technology, we've got marketing, oversight, risk, which I believe is what separates us from a lot of different real estate funds, is we actually look at risk first, then we look at sexy returns. Yeah, that's the personal update. A lot more could be said about what I did this week. I feel like 1 week for me is, one day for me, a lot of times is enough craziness for 1 week for one person. But anyways, all right, educational component. So I want to give you guys a gift. It's the free book. So it's 292 pages of how I acquired 0 to 75 units in 1 year. I wrote a little booklet like 2 years ago. I read an Amazon comment that pretty much the guy was like, this thing is horrible. There's no case studies. There's no techniques. There's no value of any, which I felt that way about it, but we just released it because I was told we just needed something to market. But this is a legit book. I'm actually very proud of it. And I had a couple people read it already and give me feedback. And their feedback was, honestly, I feel like I can go out there now and do exactly what you did. I'm very confident. I have the tools to now do it. So there's a lot of stories in there, like stories how I acquired my first investor, story how I did my first deal. It's how I acquired a multi-million dollar building. That was the first one I believe I got. It was a 24 unit building. And I share the story of how we negotiated, how we found it. I think it's really cool. But the whole preface is about the FORCE strategy, which if you guys don't know, FORCE, so it's F stands for find a deal, O stands for owner financing, R stands for raise the capital, C cash flow, which is property management, and E is expand your empire, which is how do you scale your portfolio? How do you scale your business? And that's pretty much the way that I started out, right? At age 19 with negative $187.65 in the bank account. And then to age 23, which is a 4-year difference, and having $6 million with the real estate. So I had a joy, absolute blast. I literally poured my heart and soul into the book, and I want to give it to you guys for free. So go to 0to75units.com. So that's the number 0, then T-O, the number 7, the number 5, units. .com. And if you can't find it there, go to the quackbrothers.com and you should be able to access it through some digging. But yeah, all you gotta do is just pay for shipping, which I think is like $9.97, and you get the book for free. And I don't know, if you want me to sign it, I guess email me at daniel@thequackbrothers.com and I'll do my best. I'll do my best and send me your mailing address, and I can try and send it to you. All right. Thank you guys. This update was fun. This is the second update. I'm definitely enjoying putting these little mini podcast together. I'll see you guys next week.
Hey everyone, Daniel Kwok here once again. I hope you enjoyed that episode of the First Deal Experience podcast. If you're wanting to do your first ever deal or scale your existing portfolio, I recently wrote a book to show you how I went from 0 to 75 rental units in just 1 year. Just head over to 0to75units.com for your copy. Again, that's 0to75units.com.